Rules Committee. And with that, we have one bill up today, and we're going to open a work session on SJR 4A. And is there anyone here who would like to be included in invited testimony? Oh, Senator Przanski, we'd love to have you come forward. And Mark Nelson, that would be great to have you as well.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. The SJR 4A is before you for consideration. What this bill will actually do will send to the voters in the next general election a question as to whether or not they would agree that state judges in Oregon should be able to serve as teachers in different capacities. Specifically, the Honorable Carson Rasmussen, who is a circuit court judge in Lane County, requested that this be considered and referred to the voters because there's an issue since state judges are in the judicial branch of government and the education is in the executive branch of government, that some people can make the claim that a person would be prohibited from serving in those two branches of government. Also, there because of that, there's no compensation for these individuals who give up their time and their effort to teach in public institutions. Currently, a circuit court judge or other state court judge is allowed to teach in a private institution such as across the street at the Willamette University or at Lewis and Clark at their law schools. But because of this issue, we're concerned and we felt that this is something that the voters should have an opportunity to review and consider and determine whether or not they want state court judges to be able to serve as teachers or professors in that context. I would note to you that if you look in the section of the Constitution that would be amended, back I believe it was in 1959, there was a question that was posed to the voters to allow teachers or other people that are employed in that and the Department of Education to serve as legislators. So this is another fix that we believe is necessary. And the other story I will tell you is for myself. When I was elected in 1994, I was in the Lane County District Attorney's Office. We felt at that time, because assistant district attorneys are county employees, that there'd be no prohibition about me coming, serving the legislature, taking a sabbatical from the job, and then being able to return to my duties as an assistant district attorney. Unfortunately, after we did some additional research after my election was successful in November of 94, it was clearly determined that because my power to go into court came from the district attorney, who we knew was a state executive officer, I would then be serving in two branches of government. And so these are the type of things that I think are somewhat unintended consequences. We'd like to fix this for the judges because we think it's important that judges with their expertise and knowledge to be able to provide that in a public law school setting.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson. I represent the Oregon Judges Association. I'll be very short, as Senator Przanski has very adequately explained. We currently have a situation where a judge can teach at Willamette University and at Lewis and Clark and cannot teach at the University of Oregon. Judge Rasmussen has had many requests and has actually fulfilled some of those requests. But I want to emphasize that if this does occur and he would be teaching at the University of Oregon, that would be, of course, on his own time, not on time in which he would be serving as a judge. But clearly there's a legal issue here that we think this will resolve and I think expand the horizons for those students who are attending those law schools at University of Oregon. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the reason we as the legislature cannot take care of this is because it is within the Constitution and the separation of powers. My example of myself, it basically required me to leave my position in the district attorney's office. I still do prosecution, but at a city level, which doesn't have the same problem because it's not in two branches of the same level of government. And so this is one that unfortunately needs to be actually referred to the voters instead of being something that we do within the building.
So any Representative Garrard?
Yeah.
I appreciate that. It would be not a rules meeting.
I'm
and either one of you gentlemen can respond. But I'm still concerned about the judge working in two simultaneous at the simultaneous times of working in two branches of government. And I haven't heard either of you really address the reason why the Constitution is written the way it is. Do we have a problem with an individual serving in two branches?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, my answer would be no. I think that clearly the founders were trying to keep the separation of powers from the judiciary, from the legislature, and from the executive functions of government. I don't think they envisioned this kind of situation, just as I don't think they envisioned that you'd have a school teacher who would be considered to be in the executive department and at the same time be able or not be able to serve in the legislature, and that's what the 1959 amendment did. I think in this particular case it's advantageous that it's not a conflict to the duties of a judge to serve in this case in an agency teaching. I don't think they're performing executive duties that we would normally think that could be a conflict.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Gard, if you look at the dash, excuse me, what is now the A engrossed, we actually tightened down the language from what was originally in the original drafting. We wanted to make certain that it was very clear that their limitation would be for teaching purposes as compared to doing something else. We felt that this came up during the Rules Committee on the Senate side, and we realized that the way these things need to be, let's say, presented and placed within the Constitution, it could be interpreted more broadly than intended, and that's why we've put this narrow sideboard and limitation. So we don't believe that this would be, let's say, something as Mr. Nelson said, an intended consequence of the drafters of the Constitution when they were trying to make certain the three branches of government were going to be separate. As you can imagine, when the Constitution was in fact put together based on the U.S. Constitution, based on what the colonial forefathers, founding fathers, had basically were, let's say, removing themselves from the European scenarios. And of course, the good sheriff, from his experience as a teacher, historically could give us a lot more of an in-depth prospect on that perspective.
We do not have copies of the bill, so.
Your
original file,
Mike. Here it is.
Okay. It was in my file, so it's been around for a long time, but just stuck away in my file. So. Okay.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the thought and probably intentions, but quite frankly, I'm not sure that it's that easy for me to determine what the Founding Fathers' intentions exactly were. I think there is more than just considerable merit in the separation of powers principle as it has come down to us, as you mentioned, Senator, from the Founding Fathers and the federal Constitution. And I know it on the surface would seem like kind of a little thing, and maybe it really is just a little thing. It I guess bothers me that we would have, at least from my perspective, what is a potentially a very serious sort of issue that comes to us at the very last moments. I'm not saying that I'm going to vote against this, but I am inclined to have real pause about this. And how far that separation of powers needs to be is not an issue that I feel real comfortable about making a decision on in what I would perceive to be a spur of the moment sort of thing.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond.
Sure, please.
Representative Jensen, let me just make it, I guess, as clear as I can. This is not something that just came out of a thought in the closing moments of our session. The original bill was, in fact, pre-session filed at the request of the Honorable Carson Rasmussen after he and I had talked for some time. As you and I both know, we're not at that pay scale of the leadership as to making decisions as to when or whether something is going to be allowed to move through the process. And why it was allowed to, let's say, move forward at this stage versus earlier, I can't answer that. Well, I can tell you that the intention of us was to get this forward and out there. And as Mr. Nelson said, and I've also stated, you know, this is a question that needs to go to the voters. They were posed a question basically 40 years ago, or actually 50 years ago, in 1959, as to whether or not teachers in the state should be able to actually serve in the legislature, or should they be prohibited because of their positioned in the executive branch. And I think this is exactly what we're asking the voters to do, and they can tell us whether or not they believe it would be advantageous to allow state court judges to serve in the capacity as a teacher slash professor in a public institution and not be really what I would call equity between a private or a public institution of learning.
Well, yes, Representative Jensen.
I certainly appreciate from the numbering on this that it wasn't something that was just drafted last week. And I do understand that we have several pay grades above where those of us who are the drones in the system operate.
Notwithstanding that, it still, for me, puts me in a position of being asked to make a decision on something that I'm sorry, I hold pretty sacred, and that's the Constitution of this country. Not that it doesn't need to be changed, not that the founding fathers had infinite wisdom. I mean, they were men, and at that time, unfortunately, almost exclusively men, although having read Abigail Adams' biography, sometimes there was a substantial input by some of these people, these women, even though they were not the ones who were pushing the button. But that's another question that we don't have time right now to delve into. I'm merely trying to express that I have concerns about making a quick decision on this issue. I understand, and I fully appreciate that there are a lot of judges and that they can bring some pretty incredible experience to the classroom that even the finest law professor who has never had the experience of sitting on the other side of the bench is not going to be able to provide. I often think of it on a personal basis that as a professor, teacher, call them whatever you want, that in terms of my classes are concerned, they were greatly disserviced by my not having had the opportunity
to have served in this capacity before I was their teacher, professor. That there are a lot of experiences I've gained here that I think could have been extremely valuable to the students that I served. Having said all of that, it still leaves me back kind of where I was, that it does, to make a quick decision on an issue that at least I perceive to be underneath the underlying issue, I perceive to be extremely important. And so I'm a very guarded vote at this point.
Further discussion? Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps the committee administrator knows this, perhaps Senator Prezonsky knows. Is there anything that would prevent a judge now from being a guest speaker in a class?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, I don't believe there would be anything that would prohibit an individual to come in as a guest speaker. What I would tell you in this context, sometimes like court procedure classes, they would actually be teaching the class over a period of time, and it wouldn't be a one-time or maybe even a two-time presentation on perspective, but actually would have the duties in the evening. Many of these classes are, I'm trying to think of the correct terminology that are used. Short of a full class, a seminar type of a procedure process where they would meet over a period of time, maybe an 8 weeks period, and they would be meeting once or twice a week scenarios. That's the type of presentations situations I know of that they have participated in before. And they're not, let's say, on staff as a professor. Lack of better terms, they would be more than likely considered either an adjunct professor or an adjunct instructor, and the differences are what type of degrees they have.
Mm-hmm. Just and a follow-up comment.
Yes,
the balance point I'm trying to find is where the tipping point might be between the valuable sharing of perspective and insight that I think could be accomplished through a guest speaker and the shaping of an overall view of the system and the profession. And the extent to which it tips more over toward the influence that would shape a law student's view of the legal system, that's where it starts to get uncomfortable for me, along the lines that Representative Jensen was talking about, between the separation of the branches. And I haven't figured out where I am on that, but it raises questions.
Representative Berger.
Not to maybe simplify things a little too much, but in that context, we just had testimony. We only have three law schools in this state. Two of them are private, and there is no prohibition from these judges being professors and teaching and being paid to teach at two out of the three law schools in the state. Mm-hmm. So if that is an issue, it is an issue not contained in this particular proposal, because I can assure you they do teach in those schools. So the one that is excluded is the public one down in Eugene, and I feel comfortable that this is narrow enough in that it is with regard to teaching, not with regard to everything. That I think that the students in our public institution would be better served to have this expertise before them. So I look favorably upon sending this to the voters and have them decide.
Any further discussion?
I guess what I would say is, from the teacher's perspective, I think the change in 1959 was a good one, both for public education
and for the students in those public educations and the legislature. I think we have two members here whose experience has been in public schools. Both of us are retired, I think, right now. Are you doing any teaching? Yeah, both of us are retired, so we could have done this anyway. And the judges who get retired, the other part that I have always been concerned with, we now have a retirement system that allows judges to be still being there, but have free time. And currently, without this bill, they would not be able to, during that retirement, as long as they were still hired by the courts, to take advantage of that other time to give that expertise to schools. And I think that is a loss, personally, to the institutions. And the way the bill's written, if they had the credentialing, they could also teach at a high school, government or whatever. And I for one, think that would be an extremely valuable thing for high school people. And I know that we've invited them in, and I know that they come freely oftentimes to talk about stuff and without pay. But I just look at that and say it has worked without causing a major problem in the teaching aspect of this and legislation. I don't understand why, from my perspective, it would be a problem at the judicial branch with respect to teaching in that basically one institution. So that, and is it true they are still on hire with that retirement system, the way it's set up? They still are part of the Judiciary Department. They wouldn't be able to do this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's correct. This was called Plan B,
right.
And they have a little enhanced retirement if they agree for 5 years to pro tem any place in the state for 35 days during the year. And it's been a very, very successful program, one that's being modeled in other parts of the country.
Okay. No. Representative Jensen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with all due respect to my, at least I hope, good friend from Salem, so we can narrow this down and think the rest of you are not.
Aren't you a good friend?
Yeah, right.
She's the only friend you have.
I'm about to risk this friendship here a little bit, but I would respectfully, very respectfully, point out that there is a huge and distinct difference between teaching at a private school and teaching at a state university. The intention of the original Constitution was and had to do with government, not with private sector industry as such. And I do, again, I've said everything I can say on this, or want to say, I guess, on it, but and I am going to vote for it, and I will even carry it on the floor.
Okay.
But if you risk by carrying it on the floor, you risk that I will also bring up this portion of the debate. And if you don't risk my carrying it on the floor, that won't preclude my doing that. So I appreciate everything that we're trying to do and wanting to do. I'm just wanting to, feel very cautious about it. That's all. And I have a lot of very good friends who are judges that would make great teachers. Probably better than some of my teachers and some of my students had.
Representative Edwards.
Mr. Chair, I move SJR 4A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves SJR 4A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Do adopt.
Yes. Do adopt.
Okay, with the adopt.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Berard?
No.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
No.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roland?
Aye. Motion passes. I'll carry this one. And maybe we may co-carry with Representative Jensen. And with that, we're going to...
Just a comment?
Yeah.
I have to give serious thought now because
I understand.
Representative Nolan and I have never voted the same way on a bill. In 10 years, so...
You're so startled by that.
You want to get out?
We're just recessing, right, Mr.?
I'm going to recess. I'm going to close the public, the work session on SJR 4, and then we're going to go to recess for our committee.
Thank you.